Once upon a time, there was a lovely little kingdom ruled over by a king and queen. It was a green and pleasant land where the sun shone and the rain fell, each in just the right measure. There were mountains and valleys, the seashore, forests and meadows. In short, something for everyone. The fields were rich and full of the good things of the earth, and the people were prosperous and contented. The king was handsome and wealthy and a just ruler, and he thought the queen was the most beautiful woman in the world. Consequently, the queen was happy and sweet-natured, and they loved each other very much. In most ways, they were the most fortunate of rulers, loved and respected by their subjects, with nothing lacking in their happiness. Nothing, except for one thing. They had no child. The king and queen wanted a child very badly, but the years came and went, and for a long time there was no baby in the great palace. The queen was sad and disappointed, and to make her feel better and to show her how much he loved her, the king had a special rose garden planted just for her. The queen's rose garden had every variety of rose that could be found. Roses on trees and roses on tall stems. There were tiny roses no bigger than a penny, and wonderful great roses the size of dinner plates. They grew in every color, pink and flame, pure white, and even lavender. And all around the wall which surrounded the garden, there grew the sweet-smelling, climbing briar rose. Often when the queen was feeling especially sad, she would walk in her rose garden and breathe the perfume of the thousands of roses and sigh for a little baby of her own. Then, when they had begun to give up hope, the queen discovered she was going to have a child. When she gave birth to a daughter, the king was wild with joy, and the kingdom was in a constant state of celebration. Thousands of silver bells rang so that the streets were filled with music. Flags flew and colored streamers blew in the breeze, and the people danced and laughed and sang as they shared in their royal family's delight. "Long live the king!" they cried. "Long live the queen, and long live our little princess." The king and queen planned a christening for their new baby and selected the most beautiful name they knew. They thought of every name they had ever heard of, and the king's counselors consulted long lists, and everyone in the palace went around muttering under their breath things like Clorinda and Annabella and Amy. No one could come up with just the right name. Then the queen, looking at the baby's pink cheeks and rose-gold hair, suddenly laughed and said, "She is like a briar rose, the sweetest rose in the garden." And so they decided to name her Briar Rose. Because they wanted to give the princess Briar Rose every possible blessing and good fortune, they decided to invite all the fairies they could find in the land to come to the christening to act as godmothers. They sent out messengers to every corner of the kingdom, searching for good fairies. In the woodlands, they found Hollyberry, and beside a bubbling stream, falling water washed her hair. At the river's edge was Willowmead, and in the meadows they found Meadowsweet and Thistledown. Spindrift was singing to her sea creatures beside the ocean, and on a mountaintop, Ariel floated on a cloud. Water Lily was found beside her quiet pool, and Sunrise smiled from the eastern sky. They had to wait until dusk for Firefly to come out to play, and even later for Evenstar to appear. Last of all, they found Rosalba, the youngest fairy, in the queen's own garden. Rosalba was especially fond of roses, and therefore spent a lot of time there, though the queen did not know it. Finally, 12 fairies had been found. Although they were busy, all agreed to come and be godmothers to the new princess, because fairies are usually very good at heart and love parties. Only in one tiny dark pocket of the forest did the messengers falter and turn aside. The trees there were twisted and threatening, and nothing grew but dark purple flowers which looked poisonous. Even the sky was dark, and the only stars were cold and unblinking. Surely no fairy would be found in such a gloomy place. They were wrong, of course. A fairy did indeed live there, in a dark tower. But they were not to know, so they returned to the palace with the news that 12 fairies had accepted the royal invitation to be godmothers to the baby princess Briar Rose. In preparation for the great event, the king caused the palace goldsmiths to create a special dish cover for each fairy godmother. They were made of the purest gold, set with precious jewels which spelled out each godmother's name. The cooks worked day and night, preparing a feast worthy of the greatest occasion anyone could remember. Then the day came, and the fairies began arriving at the palace. One by one they came, each more beautiful and magical than the last, dressed in their very best shimmering fairy gowns. Ariel came flying through the air on a beautiful red gold dragon. Spindrift arrived on the river riding a great white swan, Willowmead on the back of a unicorn, and Firefly simply appeared in the great hall with a small pop and a flash of rainbow-colored light. All were ushered to their places at the table, and each exclaimed with pleasure at their gifts, impressed by the king's generosity and the queen's gentle manners. The musicians began to play, and the waiters carried in great silver platters of delicious things to eat. Just as everyone was ready to begin the feast, a sudden darkness fell over the great hall. There was a terrible noise, and to everyone's dismay, there appeared another fairy in front of the king and queen. She was dressed all in black, and her wings looked more like those of a bat than a butterfly. It was she who lived in the dark place in the forest. Her name was Nightshade, and she was very, very wicked. It was not always so, of course, for wicked fairies are very rare. Nightshade was once quite a different kind of person, with another name, back when the sun still shone for her and her heart was not full of bitterness. But that comes in a different story. At the moment, she was furious. "How comes this about, that I alone am not invited to this great feast?" she cried, looking at the other fairies with an ugly glare in her eye. The king was horrified, for to anger a fairy is a very dangerous thing indeed. "Good madam," the king began, "it was surely an oversight. My messengers were instructed to invite every fairy of the kingdom. I am terribly sorry that your invitation went astray." The queen took Nightshade's arm and led her to a place of honor beside herself, hoping to soften the fairy's anger. But when she was seated, the fairy looked at her place with even more anger. To be sure, it was very fine, a gold dish and a goblet of the finest crystal, but there was no jeweled dish cover spelling out her name to set before her.
"And why have I no gift?" she cried. "You must mean to insult me."
The poor king and queen tried to assure the fairy that they had no such intention, and the queen took a beautiful ring off her own finger and gave it to Nightshade. Pray accept this ring, good madam, as a token of our apologies, and you're welcome at this table, she said. Now, anyone else in the world would have been pleased to receive a ring from the queen's hand, and would have been quite ready to forgive an accidental insult. But Nightshade really didn't want to forgive the king and queen, for she was one of those people who only enjoy causing trouble for others. So she took the ring without thanks, and sat staring at the other fairies in a way that made them all very uneasy. As the feast proceeded, the fairies chatted among themselves about what gifts they would give to the princess, and Rosalba, the youngest fairy, was disappointed that all the really good wishes had been decided upon by the others. This was especially disappointing, as she had a special feeling for Briar Rose, named as she was for the fairy's own flowers. As the talk of gifts went on, the sneer on Nightshade's face became more marked, and she smiled a sour smile to herself as if enjoying a secret joke. Observing this, Rosalba whispered to her neighbor, "She means mischief, mark my words." And with that, she rose from her place and hid behind the curtains that hung behind the Princess Briar Rose's cradle. When the feast was over, the fairies gathered at the cradle to bestow their gifts on the baby princess. The first promised that she would be the most beautiful girl in the world. The second that she would have the sweetest nature. The third that she would sing like an angel, and on to the end of the line, until only the wicked Nightshade was left. Looking around to make sure she was the last, she stepped to the cradle and leaned down, gloating into the baby's face. "And now, here is my gift. You shall surely be all these things, Princess Briar Rose. Beautiful and graceful and kind. But because your parents insulted me, when you are 17 years old, you shall prick your finger on a spindle and fall down dead." The queen cried out. The king reached out for the little princess. The lords and knights rushed forward to seize the witch. When Rosalba stepped out from behind the curtains, amid the outcry, she raised her wand, and a light fell upon the cradle. "I have not yet given my gift. Take comfort. It is true that I cannot completely undo what this evil one has done, but I can soften it. When the princess is 17 years old, she shall indeed prick her finger on a spindle, but she shall not die. She shall fall into a deep sleep for 100 years, until a king's son and her true love shall come and awaken her. Meanwhile, I shall watch over her to see that no misfortune shall befall." With an angry cry of "Meddler, we shall see who has the last word," the wicked fairy disappeared in a puff of smoke. With that, the great celebration came to an abrupt end. Shaking their heads and iridescent wings in sorrow, the fairies departed. For though 100 years was a span of no importance to a fairy, they knew that for a human it was a very long time indeed. Only the youngest fairy remained, offering the comfort of her presence to the queen. The king rose up and called his chamberlains to an emergency meeting of his council. There he made the first harsh proclamation of his reign. "On this day," it read, "it shall become a crime punishable by death to possess a spinning wheel or spindle anywhere in this kingdom. Every spindle, large or small, shall be immediately burned, and no new ones made or bought." He did not explain in the proclamation his reason for banning all spindles, for he did not wish to trouble his subjects with the worry that tore at his heart. Heralds marched through the land, reading the proclamation, and the soldiers collected all the spinning wheels and spindles from the puzzled people, piled them in the village squares, and burned them until only the finest ash remained. Seeing the great clouds of smoke that rose in the air from all the burning spindles, the youngest fairy shook her head. It was a good effort, she knew, but she also knew that it would take more than bonfires to stop the curse of the wicked fairy. She vowed never to be far away from the Princess Briar Rose so that she might try to protect her from harm. The years went by, and the little kingdom continued to prosper. The king, in an attempt to make up for all the burned spinning wheels, imported quantities of the finest cloth, and gradually the people's regret over the loss of their spindles faded. In fact, it was not very long before buying cloth instead of spinning it was considered traditional. The princess grew up, and as she grew older, she proved to be as lovely and charming as the fairies had promised. She was a delight to her parents, all the sweeter because of the secret ache in their hearts whenever they looked at her. She played and sang and danced and lived the life of a princess, happy and secure and untroubled by fear, for no one would have dared tell her about the threat that hung over her young life. Everywhere Briar Rose went, whatever she did, Rosalba, the youngest fairy, was concealed nearby, ever watchful and vigilant. And indeed, Briar Rose had a remarkably safe and happy childhood, even for a princess. Thorns never scratched her, animals never grew angry and bit her, rocks never tripped or bruised her, and in fact, all the little hurts that you and I have felt were kept away from Briar Rose. And always, the dreaded day crept closer when Briar Rose would reach her 17th birthday. Finally, it arrived. Early in the morning, the princess jumped out of her bed, ready for another beautiful day and the celebration of her birthday. The queen was waiting for her to wake up and rushed to help her daughter put on one of her new dresses, laid ready by her own hands the night before. "I could not wait to see you this morning, my darling," said the queen, seeing her daughter's surprise at finding her there so early. If she noticed the unusual number of guards in the hallway, Briar Rose did not pay much attention, for the queen kept up her cheerful chatter all the time, and the princess's mind was on the lovely day before her and the ball to come later, and of course her presence. When she reached the breakfast room, the king was there waiting, frowning with worry. His frown instantly changed to a smile when he saw his daughter and the queen, and he exclaimed cheerfully, "At last, I thought I would have to eat alone." Briar Rose rushed to embrace him, almost dancing in her excitement. "My new dresses are all so beautiful, and my ball gown for tonight is the most beautiful thing I have ever seen." "Not so beautiful as you, my treasure," said the king with a smile. "My present you shall have later, but in the meantime, here are some few trifles to begin with." He gestured to the pile of gaily wrapped packages laid ready near the princess's place. Everyone in the kingdom, it seemed, had sent Briar Rose a present, for giving gifts was one thing they especially enjoyed. The king and queen stayed chatting with their daughter while she opened some of the many gifts sent by her friends and subjects. But all the time, their eyes searched the room and the sky outside the windows, looking for danger. There were beautifully illustrated books stamped with gold, small figurines of wonderful workmanship which moved and played music, jewels and scarves and pretty playthings beyond counting. When she had tired of exclaiming over all the gifts, for even something delightful like presents can be tiresome if there are too many, the princess rose from the pile of silver paper and ribbons and announced her intention of going to the garden. The queen, who had decided not to let Briar Rose out of her sight, went with her. And together they walked around examining the newest blooms and enjoying their perfume. had they but known it and looked a little harder, they might have seen Rosalba among the flowers, smiling fondly upon her goddaughter, on the watch for any sign of the wicked fairy Nightshade. There were quite a large number of gardeners around, all busily clipping and trimming and tying up flowers, and to be sure, Briar Rose had never seen so many guards marching around in all her life. The garden was not quite so delightful as usual with all the people about, so the princess soon went inside. The poor queen followed right on her heels, chatting about this and that, and trying not to let the princess get too far ahead of her. They passed by the great ballroom where the servants were busy polishing the tall silver candelabra and carrying great tubs of flowers to decorate for her birthday ball that evening. Briar Rose danced around a little, dreaming about the ball and the handsome young men who might be there. Would she meet her true love tonight, she wondered. All the day long, as she hummed and smiled, her eyes sparkled when she thought about the romantic evening rapidly approaching. There were many things happening to keep her entertained: a parade, boat races, her music lesson, and all the bustle in preparation for the ball. She did not enjoy the day quite as much as she had expected to, however, for her mother followed her everywhere, or her father, or her nurse, or several of the guards. And of course, however much you like people, sometimes it is best to be alone. Finally, it was time to dress for the ball. Briar Rose stood in the window of her room, watching the carriages pulling up to the door of the castle, hearing the trumpets of the heralds announcing the guests. Her mother had gone to dress, but the nurse remained, fussing over her dress, her hair, and generally getting in the way. But Briar Rose had a very sweet nature and a kind heart, gifts from the good fairies, and so she said nothing cross. A knock at the door announced her parents. "You look lovely, my darling," the queen said. She was growing more relieved as the day drew into night, and nothing had happened. Briar Rose twirled on her toes so the shimmering skirts of her gown, the color of a candle's glow, swirled around her. "Here is my gift, my treasure," said her father, placing around her throat a delicate necklace of pearls and diamonds. When she had admired herself, and the necklace, and her mother's gown, and her father's suit of clothes, the charming princess declared herself ready for her ball. Her parents, smiling and proud, preceded her out the door and down the hall. Surely no spindle could come into the ballroom filled with dancing guests and harm the princess. And the ball would last until well past midnight. Rosalba, looking in at the window, made haste to follow when it happened. Meanwhile, as she followed close behind her parents, the princess happened to glance to her left as she crossed a corridor. At the end was a doorway she could not remember seeing before, a curiously decorated door standing ajar, and an old woman beckoning her. She glanced uncertainly at her parents, who had drawn a little ahead, and who were talking to one of the chamberlains about the night's arrangements. The guards who stood along the corridor seemed unaware of the old woman, and, as she had been brought up to be a polite and fearless child, the princess went a little way down the hallway toward the old woman.
"Your Highness," said the cozy old soul, "I have a present for you for your birthday, but my bones are old. Just step a little closer. 17 years have I served in the castle, and it would be so kind if you would accept my little remembrance."
She really did look almost like Briar Rose's old nurse, so round and kindly, her ruffled cap making a frame of white around her apple-cheeked face. The princess walked to the doorway and smiled at the old woman. "How kind of you to remember me," she began. Then, her eyes alighted on the strange object in the center of the room. "Oh," she exclaimed, "what is that?"
"That is a spinning wheel, my lovely little princess. Come closer, and I will show you how it works."
The princess watched the old woman spin the wheel and draw out the thread in her gnarled old hands. She nodded her head and said,
"That is called the spindle."
Curiously, Briar Rose put out her hand, fascinated by the spinning of the wheel and the winding thread, and the spindle seemed to jump at her and prick her finger. In that same instant, the old woman underwent a terrible transformation, turning from a comfortable old lady into the menacing black-clad nightshade, laughing with evil delight as the princess sank to the floor. Still laughing madly, the witch flew up into the air and out the window. The king and queen, meanwhile, had looked around in time to see the princess turn aside and had hurried back along the corridor to catch her. They rushed to the doorway when they saw her enter, but were too late to stop what happened before their horrified eyes. Crying, the queen fell to her knees beside the princess, rubbing her hands and calling her name. The king carried her to her room, where they tried drops of cool water and patting her cheeks, but she was unmoving, her face white and still. "Where is that fairy now who promised to help us?" he cried in anger and despair. Now it happened that at this moment, Nightshade, who had been flying around the queen's garden and destroying the roses for the sheer pleasure of it, let loose a particularly violent bolt of lightning, and it caught the stem of the climbing thorns which held Rosalba prisoner. The vine collapsed, and Rosalba was free. This goes to show that people who do evil things frequently have their own evil turned back upon themselves. No sooner had the king mentioned the fairy than she appeared before him. "I feared it would be impossible to prevent Nightshade from working her mischief," she said sorrowfully. "Now to do the best that is possible." She drew out her wand and touched the princess on the shoulder. Immediately, the soft color came back into her face, and Briar Rose had the look of a sleeper who is having the sweetest of dreams. "She sleeps," said Rosalba. "Come, now we have much to do." She led the king and queen into their throne room and suggested they sit down on their thrones. "What can we do?" cried the king, throwing his crown onto the floor. "She will sleep for 100 years," mourned the poor queen. "And so shall you," added the fairy, "and all in the palace, until her true love comes to find her." And with that, the fairy sent her fairy dust spiraling through the palace, putting all to sleep. The king and queen slept in their thrones, their heads together. The guards stood at attention along the corridor, all fast asleep. The cat, about to pounce upon a mouse, yawned and closed his big yellow eyes. The mouse snuggled against the cat's paws. The guests in the ballroom stopped where they were, and in mid-step, they slept. The cooks in the kitchen slept over the delicious food they were preparing, and the food and the fire and all just stopped and remained unchanging. Outside, Rosalba spun her spell around the palace so that the horses in their stables and cows in their byres all slept beside their grooms and cowmen. But Nightshade's malice was not to be undone completely. In order to prevent anyone from coming into the palace and breaking the spell, the climbing briar rose grew and grew, changed by Nightshade's evil spell into a dark forest of thorns. It surrounded the palace higher and higher until nothing could be seen but the topmost towers. And there, in the midst of the great forest of thorns, the palace and all within it slept for 100 years. As the years passed, the stories about the Sleeping Beauty in the Enchanted Palace grew and spread. The people of the kingdom remembered the good king and queen and were filled with sadness. They went on about the business of living, growing food and eating it, making shoes and wearing them, buying cloth, but not spinning it because it was tradition, and in general going along as usual. But there were no silver bells in the streets, no bright flags or streamers, no celebrations. Gradually, their sadness lifted, but they were determined never to forget the king and queen and the Princess Briar Rose. So they told the story to their children, and the children grew up and told the story to their children and grandchildren. And so it went, down through the years, as the people lived and prospered and waited for the enchantment to end. Over the years, various young princes came who had heard the legend of the Sleeping Beauty. Some, seeing the dark and forbidding forest of thorns, turned aside and went on to other adventures and other stories. Many tried to cut their way into the forest, were caught in the cruel thorns, and there they perished. And then one day a young prince named Stefan rode into the town near the palace. He stopped for a drink of cider at the inn and cast an interested eye at the towers visible in the distance, in the heart of the dark forest. "What can you tell me about that?" he asked the innkeeper.
"Alas, sir," replied the innkeeper, "that is the heart of a long and very sad story, and maybe an even sadder ending for you, if you ask."
But the prince was curious, and he insisted on hearing about the Sleeping Beauty and the evil spell. "Many have thought they were the one to break the spell," said the innkeeper, "and their bones are in there to see and serve as a warning." But the prince was not to be deterred, and he mounted his horse and rode to the edge of the forest of thorns. In his heart, he knew he was the one destined to find and waken the beautiful sleeping princess and live happily with her forever after. So he drew his sword and began slowly to cut a path for his horse. At first, the thorns parted easily and he proceeded at a good pace, but the thorns grew heavier and more grasping the further he went. Here and there, he saw the bones of the poor princes who had come before him, and he sorrowed for them. But love had been kindled in his heart, and it is the strongest magic in the world. So he fought on, cutting at the thorns and forcing a way through. His heart ached for the princess, sleeping in a tower instead of enjoying her life as she was surely meant to do. Perhaps it was the unselfishness of his love that made the difference, or perhaps he was more determined and more courageous. But whatever the reason, Prince Stefan labored on, cutting and slashing at the cruel thorns until he stood at the gate of the palace. And there he saw the gatekeeper, leaning against the open gate, fast asleep. In the courtyard, the fountain was still, the great jets of water frozen in midair. As he put his foot on the steps up to the door, the spell dwindled and faded. The great hedge of thorns shrank and disappeared, leaving behind only the sweet-smelling, climbing briar rose that grew in the queen's garden and about the windows of the palace. Guards were everywhere, leaning or sitting or sprawling, all asleep. He passed through the great doors and into the palace. There he saw the guests, all in their best clothes, though 100 years out of date, snoring away. Suppressing a laugh, he went on through the palace, looking into all the rooms and seeing everywhere the enchantment of sleep. Finally, he came to the tower bedroom where the king and queen had left their daughter 100 years ago to the day. Briar Rose. How like a rose she was, he thought, as he looked down on the sleeping beauty. With her cloud of rose-gold hair spread out on the pillow, the soft blush on her cheeks and lips, she looked so beautiful he could not resist her. Leaning down, he kissed her gently on the lips. She gave a sudden sigh and opened her eyes. Oh, she cried, you are my true love. I truly hope so, he smiled. You are, she said, for I have been dreaming about you, and I would know you anywhere, I am sure. She smiled and blushed, and he looked at her with all the adoration such a good and beautiful princess deserves. They could hear the sounds of the palace waking up around them. So after a time of looking into each other's eyes and telling each other things that were for themselves alone and so shall remain, they went out into the palace to find the king and queen. The prince had been very well brought up, and he knew that he must ask the king's permission to marry his daughter, even if he was her true love. All around them, people were waking up. The horses switched their tails, and the cows resumed chewing their cuds. The guards straightened up, hoping no one had noticed them sleeping. The cooks continued with their chopping and basting and stirring, and the cat opened his eyes and saw the mouse, but not fast enough to catch him. In the ballroom, the guests hurried to straighten themselves up and smooth their clothes, no one having any idea how they came to be in such a ridiculous state. The musicians picked up the tune they had been playing, not realizing that 100 years had passed between one note and the next. The king and queen opened their eyes at the sounds of music and embarrassed laughter and looked around. "The spell!" cried the queen, who understood at once just what had happened. Just as they rose to their feet, Briar Rose and Prince Stefan entered the throne room hand in hand, and one look at the joy shining out of their daughter's eyes told them all. "My boy, my boy," the king cried, clasping the prince's hand and slapping him on the shoulder. "Darling," cried her mother, reaching for her handkerchief. When they had all embraced and laughed and cried a little, the king picked up his crown where it had lain for all the long years of enchantment. "Well," he said, "there is a birthday ball going on, and no reason why it should not be a betrothal ball as well." And so it was that the guests received the glad announcement, and in through the doors and windows swept Rosalba and all the other good fairies, summoned to the palace by the ending of the enchantment. They had not been invited, but that didn't matter. Good fairies are always welcome guests, and they do love parties. In the towns of the little kingdom, the word spread like magic, and so it was. And the people cheered and cried out, "The enchantment is ended! The king has awakened! Long live the king! Long live the queen! Hooray for the prince and princess!" and other such nice and happy things. And so they all danced and laughed the night away, everyone in the kingdom. Everyone, that is, except for the wicked fairy Nightshade. Deep in her dark tower, where the stars were cold and unblinking, and only evil and poisonous things grew near, she heard the sounds of revelry and joy. The sound of all that happiness was unbearable. And when she realized that her spell was broken and all her bitter anger was undone, she rose up with a shrill cry and simply turned to dust. Which is what usually happens to old anger and grudges and such, and good riddance to them. But the king and queen and the beautiful Briar Rose and her handsome Prince Stefan, and the grooms and the guards and the cooks and the guests and the horses and cows and cats and mice and all the fairies and all the people of the kingdom lived one and all happily ever after.